Welcome to the Envision Rise podcast show, a podcast that helps foster respect through inclusion, service, and equity.
This is episode 7 with founder and CEO of Upful.ai, Shireen Nikayeen.
Welcome to the Envision Rise podcast. I'm Stacey Hegarty. I'm the Global Director of Equity and Inclusion for Envision Rise. Joining me today is Shireen Nikayeen. She is the co-founder and CEO of Upful.ai. Hi, Shireen. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Stacey. How are you?
Doing great. Thank you so much for joining us. You've got some really interesting things to share with us. But first, let's start with your background. Tell us about yourself.
All right. So I'm an engineer by training. I got my degrees in electrical engineering, bachelor's and a master's, and then later got my MBA. I started my career in aerospace and defense for really large enterprise companies where there was a lot of process, maturity, checks and balances. They, you know, invest in their employees a lot and train them a lot, especially on diversity, equity, and inclusion. Even, you know, 15 years ago when I started, they were doing that. Before it became, you know, more trendy the last couple of years. I then transitioned to consumer electronics. I was the lead engineer for the Beats by Dre headphones. This is a well-funded, fast-paced startup. So the culture was very different. It was more like the Wild West, especially in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion, and as well with their HR policies. And then I started working for a company that did trust, identity, and security products like APIs that detect and prevent fraud. And this is probably when I became the most knowledgeable about data privacy regulations and designing for privacy because of the sensitivity of the information that we were dealing with. And then later on, I transitioned to automotive sales, so products for car dealerships to help them sell cars, to help them communicate with people who are researching vehicles and are considering purchasing. And then that included building a chatbot for the car dealerships and data analytics platforms to analyze all the conversations they're having and come up with insights. How do we help them have better conversations? What types of conversations lead to sales? And then the last 4 years I've been working on Upful. And that's my first startup of my own. And yeah, that's kind of a long intro.
That's okay. You've had a really interesting career. So let's talk about Upful. How did you get here? Why did you decide to start this company?
Yeah, good question. So I started this company because, you know, I've been in very male-dominated roles my entire career. I guess I forgot to mention, I transitioned from engineering into product management maybe 5 or 6 years ago. And I found that through my experiences in all of these tech companies in male-dominated roles and industries, I was facing a lot of bias, which turned into discrimination. And then after having reported it to my manager or to HR, I also faced retaliation. And I found that there were no good tools on the market and there were no good processes in these more startup-y type companies to really prevent those issues from arising or even help deal with them after they happened. And specifically what happened to me was I got a piece of, after I spoke to my manager about potential bias that I was facing in my role, he started to give me negative false evaluations. And this was a complete like surprise, never happened before. I was considered a top performer before that happened. And the specific piece of feedback I got, basically, he told me, and he told this in front of HR, he said that when your colleagues ask you for help, they say that you make them feel as if they're imposing on you. Now, I don't
That's interesting feedback.
Yeah, and this was considered very negative at the time. And the thing is that he and I both knew that I was trying to manage my time better. And that I had made this very intentional shift to, you know, instead of when people ask me for help, instead of what I did before was I drop everything and I go and help them immediately. You know, if you're doing something that requires a lot of deep thought and data analysis, which is what I was doing back then, interruption like that sets you back significantly. So what we talked about with my manager, so he knew about it, was that instead of stopping immediately and going off to help somebody else, I would say something like, Hey, I would love to help you. Can you schedule some time on my calendar so we can work on this together? And that shift was, I guess, interpreted differently by some of my colleagues. And my manager decided to use that against me. And when I heard that piece of feedback, I went and I did some research. And I found a study that was very similar to this situation. And that study looked at an evaluation of a man and the woman where their colleagues asked them to stay late to help prepare for a meeting. So this was led by New York University psychologist. And in the case where both the man and the woman said, yes, I'll stay late to help, the man was rated 14% higher than the woman. And in the case where they both said, no, I'm sorry, I can't help, the woman was rated 12% lower than the man. Now, to me, this piece of feedback was very similar to this study, how the men and the women are rated very differently based on the exact same response. And what this study found was that when the man says yes, oh my God, he's amazing. He's the nicest, kindest person ever. When the woman said yes, it's expected. She's supposed to be helpful all the time, no questions asked. When they both said no, the woman is selfish. When the man said no, people assumed that, oh, he must be busy doing something more important. And I showed this study to my manager and to HR, and they decided, nope, not related. We're not going to consider this. And I thought at the time, wow, wouldn't it be nice if there was a piece of software that could tell them this information, because then they might be more likely to listen to the software and I'd be less likely to be punished for sharing it. Because as you might know, a lot of marginalized people in the workforce, when they are the ones that have to educate others about bias and discrimination, they often do get punished, but there's also a lot of like work that they're doing to do that, that they're not being compensated for either. And it's a lot of emotional baggage that they have to carry with them. So I thought, wouldn't it be nice if a piece of software would tell them about it? Because then, yeah, maybe they'll listen to it and maybe I'll not be punished for sharing it. And that's how I came up with the idea of Upful. That was the seed that started it.
That's so interesting that people are kind of programmed to believe the computer before they're going to believe the study being presented to them by a human. That's frightening a little bit, but I can certainly see where it happens. I think you're
right. Well, it's also coming from me sharing it as the potential victim. Mm-hmm. Makes me a biased source. Whereas the software, yep, might come off as like a third party ombudsman or woman.
Ombudsperson.
Yes, ombudsperson. Thank you.
I think that's such an interesting point and something we all need to be aware of. You were setting boundaries that were appropriate for you to get your tasks done, and those boundaries were not being respected. And I think that happens a lot in the workplace, specifically to women. I think it happens to everyone, but the expectation of women is to be helpful in the moment, not that being helpful at a time that's more convenient isn't seen as help. It's, mm-hmm, seen as you're being put upon or something along those lines. So that's very interesting. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about how managers are actually being trained to have these kinds of conversations with employees. It happens every day. There's always something that needs to be addressed by a manager, whether it's performance or behavior or tardiness or what have you. It could be any number of things. And I know when I first got into a management position, nobody trained me on these kinds of things. Yeah, we had some leadership training. Somebody did a present, made us all read Who Moved My Cheese, that kind of stuff. There were some motivational things in there. But there was nothing that helped me to understand how to have these conversations with employees who were perhaps being perceived as not being helpful or not being a team player, and understanding their side of the story and helping them to better manage the things that are coming up that may cause conflict so that they aren't being viewed as not a team player, as not helpful, or any of those kinds of things. So what kinds of tools would an organization need in order to better train their managers to be better people leaders in all aspects, not just in motivating towards goals, but in corrective actions kinds of conversations.
Right. So there's a lot of companies, usually larger companies, that have the in-person training or maybe like video or online training on, it might be diversity, equity, inclusion, it might be specifically they've started to have bias and performance reviews that they discuss. And then there's like new manager training and maybe even refreshers for all managers on an annual basis right before the more formal review happens. And maybe it's like weeks before or months before. And the traditional training is important for people to learn those lessons. But what we've also found through our interviews of over 1,000 stakeholders to date is that when people sit down to actually give feedback or assess another human being, they usually forget everything that they learned. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we saw this like secondary opportunity for Upful, because it started off as like, hey, we want to kind of minimize biases that show up in performance evaluations. But what we learned through all these interviews is that people are unreliable raters of other people. Like, this is one of the cognitive biases that we have. We're unable to rate each other or evaluate each other in a fair and even accurate way. And so what we thought this opportunity for Upful was that if we did the training in the moment, so if we reminded people of all of those best practices that they learned in their traditional training, if we remind them in the moment as they're typing, if we can analyze what they're saying, so if they're saying something very vague or subjective or speculative or even potentially biased, if we can detect that, then we can remind them of whatever is the best practice for that. Maybe remind them to add a specific example. And in the process of them thinking of that specific example, they may change their opinion and change what they're saying and how they're saying it. And we ask questions to provoke deeper thinking about what they're saying. And this, we believe, and our hypothesis is, which we'll have to prove eventually through a lot of data, is that we can reduce different types of cognitive biases, and we can help make the evaluation and the feedback more meaningful, as in like the person receiving that feedback can actually learn from and act on it, but make it even more objective and unbiased so that it's more representative of this person's performance and potential, so that then it doesn't negatively impact their ability to get a raise or a promotion, or on the flip side, get selected for a layoff or a termination. And on the more meaningful side, like when you're getting more meaningful feedback and you're able to develop yourself through that more meaningful feedback, you're more likely to be, as an employee, be more engaged and stay at the company, so we could potentially reduce voluntary turnover.
I've had the chance to take a peek at this software, and I thank you for that. It's very interesting. Maybe let's talk a couple of examples that come up kind of frequently for users of this software, that they're sitting down, they're writing somebody's quarterly or annual evaluation. And unfortunately, the reality is, I think for many managers, that these kinds of performance reviews are often done under pressure, and they're done with a very tight deadline, and everything else is still going on, and it becomes this task that I just have to get this done, instead of I need to do this in a really thoughtful and mindful way to not only showcase the best that the employee has to offer at this point, but to also thoughtfully give corrective feedback that can help the employee improve and be more engaged, not only with their day-to-day tasks, but with the organization. So let's talk a little bit about what are some of the things that come up in performance evaluations that your tool will say to the writer, hey, wait, are you sure you really want to say this?
So by the way, the approach to the way that we do our coaching, it's always non-accusatory. And we do this specifically because it's less likely to create a defensive reaction in the person receiving it. And so we're using best practices and proven methodologies with behavioral science research in the way that we do our coaching, so that people can actually learn and change their behavior over time. And that's why we're using a little bit of nudge theory, and we won't ever say like, oh, you're doing something wrong, you're doing something bad, or you're being biased. We never do that, because that's not going to help somebody learn. And as soon as we say something like that, they will never listen to us again. And this is also problematic of a lot of the traditional training approaches, because sometimes it does create a defensive reaction. And there's studies over the last 30 years for this type of traditional training that show it does create a defensive reaction in the worst offenders. And so we're trying to develop something that for the worst offenders, they might actually slowly be able to learn from something like this.
Give me a couple of examples of things that come up just sort of unconsciously or like consciously phrases. as a manager is writing. What comes up a lot that your tool is able to say, hey, wait, stop, let's reevaluate that?
Yeah. So what comes up a lot is people saying very vague statements because they're afraid of being constructive. And you'll see that their ratings might not be consistent with the language that they use in the review. Like they might give a mediocre or low rating on something, but then they don't give any constructive feedback in the review and they just kind of stay very positive because they're afraid. And a lot of managers are afraid to go there. And so we'll catch that if somebody is staying very vague, like, oh, they did a good job, they did a great job with X, Y, and Z, we're going to prompt them and we're going to ask them, that's awesome. Why was it great? Can you give a specific example? They might do it more often. So this is on the positive side, we're doing the coaching as well, because we might want to try and pull something constructive out of it. Like, why was it great? Or maybe it wasn't, you know? And then on the more negative side, you know, people who are using very extreme language, for example, if you use the word always and never, we are going to prompt them. Can you rephrase this? It's a little bit extreme. Can you describe, you know, how often and in what period of time? And all of this, like the coaching, the language and the tone, we can adjust based on what we learn from how people react to it. So those are some of the examples of the more like broader, you know, talking about vague and subjective language. And then there's the what we call the potentially biased language. We don't label it that way, but things like calling a woman aggressive or emotional or angry, we might ask the same thing, like, oh, why did you feel this way? Can you give a specific example of when this person exhibited that behavior? Could it also be considered, and we'll give some alternatives. So in the example with aggressive, the alternatives might be assertive and confident. And if the person decides to switch to one of those words, they can, but it's just meant to be there as like, you know, here's some other ideas.
I love that because there are so many times when people are being mislabeled in what their behavior actually is, and it's not nearly as extreme as what somebody has written down or even what they initially felt about that person's behavior. If they reflect a little bit, they realize, okay, it wasn't that. It was something else that I still didn't like and maybe wasn't appropriate, but it maybe wasn't as extreme as my initial reaction was. This is such a great tool. So let's talk about being a startup. What's it been like? How has the startup experience been?
All right. When I had the idea, I was obviously working for a company. And as I mentioned, I faced retaliation after making this report and bringing up this study, for example. And I lost that job. And I was about 1 month into starting my MBA program, part-time. I was planning on doing the MBA while working, and I lost my job 1 month into the MBA program. And I started to think about this idea more and more. And a few months later, I applied for an entrepreneurial fellowship with this idea. I pitched the idea and I pitched my entrepreneurial spirit background, and I got it. It was $15,000, and it was a huge deal to me. Nobody had ever like believed in me in that way before. So during the MBA program for those 2 years, I focused on customer discovery and market research because I was an HR outsider. I didn't know anything about the HR profession, and I didn't have a network that could help me figure out, you know, where does this product fit into the market? So I started going to conferences and I met probably over 2000 HR tech diversity, equity, and inclusion experts and other tech founders, industry analysts. And I got to say, like, this entire industry is incredibly inviting and warm. and accepted me and showed me around. Like, there's plenty of other startup founders that I met who introduced me to industry analysts and other HR leaders and executives at Fortune 500 companies. I mean, I was sitting in this room, my bedroom, before COVID, taking meetings with C-suite executives from these Fortune 500 companies. It felt very, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I was just starting a company from nothing. And here I was getting to meet with some of the most powerful people in this industry. So I met with a lot of chief people officers, chief diversity officers, chief legal officers. And honestly, because I came from working as a product manager for a few different companies before starting this company, I felt somewhat prepared to take the journey because, A, I always wanted to do this, but product managers, in case other people aren't aware, it's probably the most entrepreneurial role within a company because we are responsible for the vision for new products. We do the research to back it up. We maybe even do projections, like how big can this product be? We communicate that vision and leave the development teams to build it, the sales and marketing teams to get customers. And we do lifecycle management. So because I was a PM for other startups, I always looked for ways to impact the bottom line, whether it was user growth or engagement, product optimization, new features, process improvement. So in a way, it was no different than what I was doing for my own, for Upful. But the main difference is that we have zero resources. I have to find them myself. Let's see, no team to start with. Obviously, you started with just me and no funding. So very hard to just go out and hire people. You have to be able to convince them of the vision and of the potential for this type of product and find people who are passionate enough to solving this problem, who will work on it with you without getting paid. So
that's a tough sell.
Yeah, it's pretty difficult. On the more positive side, though, I got to do things that my previous managers never gave me the opportunity to do. And I was able to prove to myself and to others that I'm capable of doing these things. So it's a huge growth opportunity for me as well.
So what advice would you give to someone who is thinking, you know what, it's time for me to do what I've been dreaming about doing? Someone who wants to start their own company and isn't really sure even where to begin. Do you have any great advice?
There's like a ton of advice, but it depends on the person's situation. Now, I prepared for this because in the back of my head, I always wanted to start my own company. So, you know, I'm privileged in that I don't have any dependents. I don't have a mortgage. So I can take these types of risks. And I understand that for a lot of other people, it's more difficult to take those risks. And I would still recommend that you try doing your startup on the side while keeping your full-time job, until there's kind of like a shift where maybe your startup starts to, you know, have traction and you're thinking about fundraising, in which case you might want to switch to working on it full time, especially if you're fundraising. Investors want to see that you're in it full time. You're giving it your all and it is, you know, 100% of your focus. But in terms of doing this, I think that people should try to do it on the side and you should focus on getting a team early on so that the process isn't as lonely, so that it's not all on you. And do the market research. Make sure that this is a product that people want, that it's solving a real problem, and that the opportunity is big enough for you to take that risk. And that's really like the first thing that we did. And I did primary and secondary research. So primary being that I interviewed a ton of people in the field, but secondary being that I looked at all like the solutions that were out there. What are HR tech companies doing? What are the performance management suites doing? Do they have features that already do this? No, they don't. What about all the companies that have in the last few years started to de-bias or minimize biases in the recruiting and the hiring process? Are they doing anything with this? No, they're not. Are they planning to? Maybe, but when I interviewed them, they also said that they had no plans to. So that could be a good thing. That could be a bad thing. But yeah, I suggest starting off with research before you ever start to build a product.
You've done a lot of research. And let's talk a little bit. What were some of the surprising things that you found about how the employee review process is actually working in real life. I know most HR departments would say we have this specific process and it works really well. Does it? Does it not? My experience has been that most of the time it works kind of as intended, but it's never running the way that the process was set up. What were some of the things that you've learned as you did your research?
Well, every company does it differently. And it's very different between big and small companies, and smaller companies might not even have tools. They might be doing it on paper. Certain industries still use paper. Those are obviously not going to be the ones that we can target. But yeah, they might be using surveys like SurveyMonkey, Google Docs, email. Some of them are using real like performance management platforms, and they might be doing it once a year, twice a year. Maybe they're doing continuous real time. Continuous real time feedback is definitely a positive if people use it, because it can reduce the effects of recency bias, because the feedback is more fresh when it's on people's mind. If it's documented, you can use that for the more formal end of year review, which will then make that more accurate as well, because now you can feed in all the stuff that you captured throughout the year. If you do 360 feedback, you're also reducing biases, because maybe one person or multiple people don't like you. And because they don't like you, they're not going to accurately rate you or give you feedback. And so getting it from many people in your circle at work might help round out some of those outliers. So there's a lot of different processes. And then some companies decouple the evaluation from making decisions about promotions or salary increases. And what they found is that when you decouple it, the feedback is actually more meaningful. Well, actually what they found was, scratch that, when you decouple the performance evaluation process from decisions around promotion and salary, studies have shown that ratings are different. So what that means is people are biased by the purpose of the evaluation.
Interesting. So does that mean that if you're evaluating somebody with an eye towards promotion, are the evaluators thinking?
It depends who's writing it.
Okay. So that's interesting.
Yeah. And so there's also another issue. One is, you know, with companies that do self-assessments and then manager assessments. So what other studies have found is that self-assessments can be negatively impacted by imposter syndrome. So, for example, what they found were that women and other marginalized groups of people in the workforce are impacted by imposter syndrome, and then they more negatively rate themselves. So their ratings are often lower than that of a white man, for example, their self-ratings. And even the language that they use can be different. And when a manager reads those ratings and reads the language that the people use to describe their accomplishments throughout the year, when somebody else reads that and then has to make a determination of, you know, the manager rating and the manager assessment, they're going to be anchored by the self-assessment. And so what happens is you'll see that, I wish I could have the visual to show you, but you'll see that a manager's rating and assessment from women and these other marginalized groups are lower than that of the white man who has a higher self-assessment. And so we can show that these self-assessments do anchor manager assessments, but we also understand that managers might not have the ability to remember everything about every employee. So they do have to depend on the employees to self-advocate. And then there comes another problem, is that with self-advocacy, women are more likely to be punished for that because they come off as like, oh, they're, you know, kind of have a big ego, they're bragging. It doesn't come off as humble, but if a man does it, it's okay. And so there's a lot of traps here. So something like Upful could be applied to self-assessments to help the employee in how they describe their own accomplishments, so that when their manager reads it, it's also kind of trying to minimize the biases throughout that process. We've also interviewed a number of HR teams that manually read through evaluations. And there's all different versions of this. Some of them get it from the manager. They read it And if they notice some inconsistencies or vague language or extreme language or even biases, like this is a human interpreting, does this evaluation have biases that are risky or unhelpful or unconstructive? They might mark it up or talk to the manager about it before the employee ever gets to see it. So this is a very time-consuming process and a lot of one person trying to apply a lot of things to a review. In some other companies, maybe they'll only look at like 1% of the reviews because there's so many. It's a bigger company. So we've seen it in a number of different ways. And something like Upful could eventually be able to analyze that language and mark it up. First, it would do the training for the manager who's writing it in the moment. But secondarily, if there was something that was indicative of bullying or a more serious type of discrimination, we could flag that for a human in HR to review. So then they don't have to go through and read hundreds and hundreds of reviews. And then also because it's a human doing this, they can't apply the same principles the same way to every single review. So in this way, you can consistently evaluate all of the reviews and flag the ones that need a human to look at.
When I think about the impact that it could have on an employee, if you've ever had a less than positive performance review with your manager, you walk out of there feeling like, ugh. And no matter how well written it is, if there's something in there that you're perceiving as the reason I got this low score in this area is because that manager doesn't like me, or that manager has a problem with me because I am LGBTQ+ or whatever, that has an immediate and dramatic impact on that person's performance, certainly that day, probably continuing over some period of time. And what kind of impact does that have on employee retention and all the knowledge that leaves when an employee voluntarily leaves? So yeah, that's really interesting. So a term I've been hearing a bit about lately, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on it, is the punishment gap. What is that?
Okay. The punishment gap. Basically, I found this through the World Economic Forum, and they have some studies and statistics on this. But basically, there was a study done on a financial advising company, a firm. And what they found was that following, and I'm going to quote, following an incident of misconduct, women are 20% more likely to lose their jobs from that misconduct compared to men.
Did they describe misconduct?
It could be like an error in something that they were doing, or it could be like maybe they placed a buy for some stocks. Mm-hmm. That was a mistake, or they shouldn't, or it was unauthorized. It could be something like that. And they also found that women were 30% less likely to find new jobs after that relative to their male counterparts.
So that is really a high expectation of perfection for women.
Yeah.
That just doesn't exist in the same magnitude for male counterparts. Is that really what this is saying?
Yes. And further, the study said that men are twice as likely to be repeat offenders and engage in misconduct that is 20% more costly.
I'm not even sure what to say to that. Oh my gosh. Okay. So that for me really, it sort of harkens back to what we were talking about earlier of women having the expectation to drop everything, be nice,
be
play
perfect,
well with
100%
others
of the time, be liked by everybody 100% of the time. I think I've used that exact language in some of my conversations.
That's a tough expectation for anybody to meet.
Yes, yes. But there's good news. So part of the study also showed that at firms with no female representation in the executive level, female financial advisors are 42% more likely to experience that job separation after a misconduct, okay, compared to a man, 42% more likely. So what that means is if you have more female representation at the top, you're less likely to have these horrible numbers. and horrible outcomes.
And representation matters. And
representation.
Yes. Representation matters. And even in ways that we don't necessarily think of. I wouldn't have thought about this.
Yeah. So like, for example, at a tech company, representation and management means that we're more likely, the company is more likely to develop products that protect and serve more people equally. So when you have some companies putting out, you know, AI algorithms that are harming, for example, Black people, because it recognizes them differently when they have their image processing algorithms, I bet you that if they had more diverse teams working on those algorithms, but also at the top, so that people who are diverse in the middle or the lower level positions, entry level positions, have the ability to speak up and voice their concerns about something, that they have an advocate at the top who's also going to listen and allow for that to be heard, these companies are going to have better products that protect and serve more people. So it's going to help their bottom line. We actually interviewed a chief diversity officer from Fortune 50 tech company, high tech company. This was the number they told us. They told us that they lose 45% of their underrepresented hires within 3 years of joining.
That is a staggering number. That is staggering.
And they told us that it was because of the lack of inclusive culture. And that could manifest in a number of different ways, but it can certainly show up in a performance evaluation and their ability to grow in that period of time. And there's a simulation that was performed by Rice University that showed, and this is all based on two equal people, not even differences in gender or race and ethnicity, two equal people with a 5% difference in performance ratings, and how that tiny 5% difference creates a two-level gap in 7 years. So that two-level gap, it's not just a gap in like where they are and how quickly they got promoted. It's also indicative of their earnings over that period of time, which is huge. That again shows you it's not just about, you know, getting hired up into more higher level or managerial or leadership roles. It's about retention and growth within a company. And this is exactly where, you know, in my research, I found there are really no products trying to do that, especially from the bias angle.
I haven't heard any organization that's doing what you're doing. I think it's an incredible tool.
There are a number of great companies that are doing analyses, like data analysis for companies to discover these issues, but they're not offering the solution to them yet. So those companies would then like refer us in the future.
Got it. Got it.
But they're doing the analysis to help companies uncover those issues. And one of them is, you know, looking at promotion velocity, slicing and dicing it by different groups of people. So it could be by department and it could be by level or role, but it could also be by gender, race and ethnicity, age. It could be by LGBTQ or sexual orientation. It could be by disability. All of these things might have an impact on promotion velocity, and there may or may not be a good reason for it.
I'm glad that the data is being looked at, and I'm glad that there are organizations like Upful that are looking for solutions to known problems that we know are there and we're not sure how to fix. So the last question I have is one that I ask of all of our guests, and it's not related to, well, it may not be related to your organization or your job or anything like that. One of the things that I think has been really important for a lot of us, especially during the past year, 14 months, is learning. So what new things are you learning? Have you picked up a hobby? Is your whole life right now just with Upful? Is there something fun that you're learning to do? I always laugh that when we started the stay-at-home orders, I decided I was going to learn to bake bread. I cannot bake bread. What I have learned is that I'm terrible at it and I should let other people do that. Is there anything that you're doing different now?
Actually, my co-founder, Eli, started baking sourdough.
Would Eli like to teach me, because I'm terrible?
Maybe he would. So I already had like a lot of hobbies that I could do alone. alone and indoors, but I've continued doing that. So I like to play the violin, I like to play guitar, and I like to sing. And actually just, you know, a month ago, I decided to buy a professional microphone with the isolation. Oh my God, I don't even know all the terms. A shock mount. Uh-huh. And a pop filter. So I just bought that and I'm going to start playing with it. But I love recording covers.
Oh, that's fun. So far, you're winning the coolest thing that you're doing this year.
Oh, and another fun one. Maybe you can try this one. Wire crochet.
Oh, no. What is that?
You can make jewelry with wire crochet.
Okay, that's fun. Maybe I will be better at that than I am at baking. Well, Shireen, I thank you so much for sharing so much knowledge with us today. We're very excited to see what happens with Upful. Where can people go to find out more about Upful and maybe get a demonstration and engage with you?
Yeah, you can go to upful.ai and there's a form on there where you can reach out to us. Actually, the emails all come to me, so I will reply personally. We could do a demo, we could do a Q&A, you can learn anything you want about it. And we're also on LinkedIn, so you can find me or find the company on LinkedIn and check out some of our posts about inclusive language and performance reviews.
Well, again, Shireen, thank you so much. Congratulations on getting the startup started. And we are looking forward to having you back in the future so you can tell us all the wonderful things that are happening at Upful.
Thanks so much for having me, Stacey.
And thank you, everyone, for tuning into the Envision Rise podcast. You can reach me at Stacey, S-T-A-C-I, at envisionrise.com. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Remember, diversity and inclusion should not be treated as a one-off initiative. And so with your help, we can get this message to more people. Subscribe, rate, and review the show, and be a part of making a difference, because it starts with you.